We're in Mark chapter 12. You want to open up your Bibles over there tonight. So, Mark chapter 12 is a, you get a little glimpse into the mind of the, what frustrates Jeremy tonight. Because we see Jesus dealing with some things that when I have to deal with them, I find myself very frustrated. But before we get into that, I want to tell you guys about a website I found called googlefeud.com. Have you guys heard of this? The kids had when I was messing around with it last night. It's basically think Family Feud. And so you pick the categories, culture, people, names, or questions. They give you top 10 answers on the board, and you have to type in how Google auto completes certain sentences. It's kind of a fun way to pass the time and see how intellectually depressed our country is, right? And it is sort of depressing when you start looking at it. Like one of the questions that we had last night that I had seen before is, does the moon have, and you had to guess what came next in autocomplete. So just think about that in your own mind. If you were Googling, does the moon have, what would you as an intelligent person, because we're all, first off, we're all intelligent people here tonight, right? Okay, good. Did you know that gravity, does the moon have gravity, was like the top second or third answer? Because apparently people don't understand that if it has mass, it has gravity. Some of you guys are looking at me like you've never heard that before. We're moving on. Moving on. Okay. And I know. We're about to get into Mark chapter 12 where Jesus is being asked all of these questions. And so we're going to qualify this. And I know a lot of people buy into the line that there is no such thing as a stupid question because Carl Sagan said it, so it must be so. However, I am convinced that there are indeed, questions that are intellectually depressed, idiotic, stupid. For instance, I think I've told you guys this story before, maybe I haven't. When I was in the Marine Corps training privates, we taught them what was called immediate action drills. Since I was at an infantry school, we were learning infantry techniques, and we were teaching immediate action drills. And the purpose of an immediate action drill is to minimize, understand that's the key word there, minimize casualties among the troops. And one of the immediate action drills is for aircraft, incoming aircraft. And so you figure out the flight of the aircraft, and you lay in a line 15 feet apart, perpendicular to the flight of the aircraft. Because if that plane has guns and it starts shooting at you, we're trying to minimize casualties here. He might only get one or two of us. The rest of us are going to be okay. I had a private ask me. I think I was a corporal at the time. Corporal Folding. Yes, Marine, what do you want? What if he opens his cockpit and drops a grenade? Stupid question. For one thing, effective casualty radius of a military hand grenade was only 5 meters, so even 15 feet apart, he'd only get one of us, right? And we're still minimizing casualties. But secondly, he was going to do the math on his speed, dropping open the cockpit, figuring out where he needed to drop it ahead of time so that the grenade would land exactly perfectly on our line of guys spread out 15 feet apart. So I'm convinced that there's stupid questions. But I want us to define what makes a question less than intelligent before we get into the text, okay? First, here's your first definition of what makes a question unintelligent. You have asked a question on something that has already been answered. You just weren't paying attention. That's definition number one. Definition number two, questions that can be answered with less than a minute of research. Okay? Especially in our society, and we'll talk about it in Jesus' society here in a minute. If you have a question about something, what is the fastest way to get an answer? In less than a minute of research, you pull out your phone and say, hey, Google. Okay? Number three, questions where the answer is obvious through observation to those who have lived on this planet for more than a decade. Okay? Those are my three definitions of what makes a question less than intelligent. And I'm going to submit at this point, too, that the adage, the only stupid question is the one not asked, applies only to a classroom where a person is seeking information and knowledge on a subject that they didn't previously have. That's going to be the only time I think that adage applies. All right? That being said, Mark chapter 12 is filled with questions. It actually begins in Mark chapter 11 where they're asking Jesus, by what authority do you do these things? As he's come into town and he's cleared out the temple of the money changers. We're not going to focus on his answer to that question. We're only going to be paying attention to, where we begin it. Verse 13, then they sent some of the Pharisees and Herodians to him in order to trap him in a statement. They came and said to him, teacher, here's question number one. We know that you are truthful and defer to no one, for you are not partial to any, but teach the way of God in truth. Is it lawful to pay a poll tax to Caesar or not? This falls into reasoning number three, questions that where the answer is obvious through observation to those who have lived more than a decade on this earth. Okay? And then we jump down to, so Jesus answers the question, we jump down to verse 18, some Sadducees, and notice what Mark is doing for us here, in case we don't know the Sadducees' theology or the idea of what they think about resurrection. Some Sadducees who say there is no resurrection came to Jesus and began questioning him, saying, teacher, Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies and leaves behind a wife and leaves no child, his brother should marry the wife and raise up children to his brother. There were seven brothers, and the first took a wife and died having no children. The second one married her and died leaving behind no children, and the third likewise. And so all seven left no children. Last of all, the woman died also. In the resurrection, when they rise again, which one's wife will she be? For they had all married her. That's reasoning number two. Question that can be answered in less than a minute of research. You don't believe in resurrection, but you're asking a question about it. Okay? And then 35 through 37, we jump down a little bit further. Not 35 through 37, my bad. 28 is where we've got it here with the greatest command. One of the scribes came and heard them arguing, and recognizing that he had answered them well, asked him, what commandment is the foremost of all? And this falls under reasoning number one, because it's already been explained. The questioner was not paying attention. So, these three questions come from the ruling class of the Jewish people in Jerusalem. And this chapter is quite possibly the most frustrating chapter for me in the entire Bible. Because there are questions that aren't asked to gain insight. They're not an understanding. There's obvious motivations there if they're trying to trap them. But these questions are below the pay grade of the people that are asking them. Put it another way. These questions are a cheat on these people's intellect. They're petty. Just trying to stir trouble, trying to stir the pot, trying to create a scene in what they're doing. And I get so frustrated about this because that's how I feel whenever I get asked questions like that. It frustrates me to no end to know that a person is of a higher intelligence order than the question that they are asking or the statement that they have made. And we've all been around people who have made statements or asked questions that were well below their pay grade. They just weren't either thinking when they opened their mouth. Their brain mouth filter seemed to be malfunctioning at that point. Or they were just trying to cause trouble, right? But I'm supposed to be learning something from Jesus in this chapter. We're approaching Mark as this. We're following in the footsteps of the master. He's the author and perfecter of our faith, and so he's blazing the trail for me. So I'm supposed to be learning from him and how to walk in this world. So what am I supposed to learn from Jesus? And the answer is how to behave when you're under pressure, but also being asked questions of this nature. Let's look at Psalm 37 real quick here, guys. Psalm 37, we'll start in verse 1. Do not fret because of evildoers. Be not envious toward wrongdoers, for they will wither quickly like the grass and fade like the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and cultivate faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust also in him, and he will do it. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light and your judgment as the noonday. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who carries out wicked schemes, cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It only leads to evil doing. It's an interesting way that the psalm writer puts that in this concept of not being anxious, not being upset about people whose motivations may be less than pure, but also leaning completely in your trust on the Lord so that it is His righteousness that ends up shining forth in whatever situation you find yourself in. It doesn't necessarily even have to be what we're looking at here from Mark chapter 12. It can be anything, right? As long as I'm calm and remaining trusting in the Lord, His righteousness is the light that shines. And people are going to see that, right? Jesus is calm here. And I think it's staggering how calm he actually is, because we already know that to enter into Jerusalem meant death for Jesus. He knows he's going to die. But yet here he is, as cool as a cucumber, in front of all of these questions and everything that's coming at him, at this point when he's trying to get this through the thick skulls of everybody that is around him, that he is about to fulfill all of the promises and prophecies of God as he's going to be nailed to the cross, put in the tomb, and then raised. And they're asking these kind of questions. But not only is he calm, what do we see Jesus doing in each of the situations here? In each of the questions, what does Jesus do? He answers them. And not only is he willing to answer the question, no matter the intelligence level or motivation of the questioner, he is respectful in his answers. He's actually respecting the questioner as a person and dealing with them as people. And the reason, I think there's a couple of reasons why all of this is happening and why he's able to stay calm other than what we looked at in the psalm. But there are others who are going to be listening that Jesus recognizes they need to hear this anyway. Whether it's a repeat of the information or not, they're going to need to hear this. And Jesus isn't the one that looks foolish by answering foolish questions. That blew me away when I finally figured that out in reading Mark 12. It's the people asking the foolish questions that actually look foolish in the scenario. Because as you look back into Mark chapter 12, in verse 37, and the large crowd enjoyed listening to him. They were enjoying the wisdom and the coolness and the calmness of Jesus' answers, while at the same time getting to see the foolishness of the questioners that were being of the questions that were being presented. So we go back to our reading in Proverbs 17, right? But we'll look at verse 27, tie it in with verse 28. Because it says there, he who restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is considered prudent. That's what the people needed to hear. They needed to hear a guy with a cool spirit, a man who is can rise above the foolishness that's going on around him and answer and communicate clearly and respectfully no matter the situation. And at the same time, here's the other beautiful thing about this, because sometimes we think to be calm and respectful in the way that we approach things means that we have to cow to any kind of erroneous ideas that are out there. But that's not even, we don't even see Jesus doing that here, right? Because twice he will say to the Sadducees in their ridiculous resurrection question, is this not why you are mistaken? Or he'll just tell him, point out, you are mistaken. You're not understanding this. So let me educate you. Let me give you the information you need. Now, so what are we learning from this? Let me ask you guys a question. How many times do we let our emotions respond instead of intellect when we find ourselves in situations like that? I would be willing to submit to you that we're probably more ready to lean on our emotional response than a calm, cool, respectful response. Does the emotional response do any good? It really doesn't. It really doesn't. But if we're remaining calm and respectful in the way that we're approaching any scenario, it can be stupid questions, it could be anything that we find ourselves in, it will come across as wisdom. And even if Jesus is as frustrated with these questions as I get when I read the chapter, okay, even if he is, and I'm not saying that he is, he's still cool and he's still answering, because the heart and the motivation of the questioner doesn't matter. Mark tells us why they were doing it, just to help us get an idea of the picture of everything that's going on in Jerusalem at this time. But it really doesn't matter. What matters is the answer and the response, because that's what we're responsible for. That's what Jesus is showing us here. This is the path that he's leading us on. We're responsible for the words and that flow from the heart of us and how we deal with people. Last scripture, and then I'll get down for the night. Proverbs chapter 12. Proverbs chapter 12. Let this be one of our guiding scriptures for the week as we go forward, recognizing how we need to be thinking about responses and dealing with people, especially with Easter around the corner. And this is going to be one of those two times in the year where everybody is talking about Jesus, or at least willing to hear something about Jesus. Let this be one of our guiding thoughts through this. Proverb writer there in chapter 12, starting in verse 13, says, "An evil man is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous will escape from trouble. A man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his words, and the deeds of a man's hands will return to him. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. A fool's anger is known at once, but a prudent man conceals dishonor. He who speaks truth tells what is right, but a false witness deceit. There is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise bring healing. Truthful lips will be established forever, but a lying tongue is only for a moment." As we work and live on this earth as ambassadors of Jesus, as we follow the footprints of the Master, living the life he's called us to, let's be a people who are described there in verse 18. There is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but let's be this, the tongue of the wise that bring healing as ambassadors of our Lord. Remaining calm, worrying about the heart and motivation of those that we are having conversations with or asking questions, but just simply being focused on the words that come out of my heart, because those are the ones that we answer for. And that's who we can have any control over anyway. We're going to stand and sing. Galen has a song for us. And we're going to use this opportunity and time for those of you that may be here tonight that are looking and seeking prayers from the church. You found yourself struggling, whether it's in the way that you're handling conversations or situations like that, or you find yourself in just a different scenario that's been weighing on you, and the weight of that guilt has brought you to the point where you're ready to make confession. This is a time for that, to bring that sin and just let go of it. Seek forgiveness of the Lord, seek the help and encouragement of the body. But it's also a time that if you're ready to become a Christian by being baptized, then we encourage you, come while we stand and sing.